where being abnormal is completely acceptable. I'd like to thank you all for tuning in once again. I really appreciate the support. Last episode, I talked a little bit about some survival skills, things like purposes for a 5-gallon bucket, and things in case of some big emergency response situation in your local area, such as fires, floods, or some type of chemical explosion or something to that degree. Now, today I have something a little bit different. First, I want to ask you guys, have you ever heard of the old saying, you got to crack a few eggs to make some omelets, right? Yeah, I'm familiar with that. So I want to talk a little bit about the gardening aspect of that and building this cabin that I've been working on. So first of all, last week I heard this gentleman on some type of reel. He said there are certain, I would say, characteristics or components of homesteading or off-grid. I can't remember his name, can't find it, but I thought it was interesting. And there are some basic things like water collection, whether it be rain, well, or something like that. Also power, solar, generators, wind turbines, even water turbines, whatever case. He also mentioned things like canning and preserving your food, which that equipment is quite an investment. I think I saw some stuff and there were some classes that were at that homesteading conference I didn't go to because it really wasn't my thing just yet. And I also heard things about a root cellar. Does anyone know anything about what a root cellar is, how that works? I guess it's a thing. I mean, I guess if you have roots and they can stay for a long period of time, that is awesome. So also, don't forget about livestock. I would imagine you would have to have some type of protein, unless you're strictly vegetarian. And whether it be chickens for eggs and whether it be goat or whatever people eat. And I would imagine that calves and cows are a really big deal, probably pretty expensive. And of course, pigs of some sort. But for starters, I want to talk a little bit about the last thing, your own food. How do you go about getting good food? And I saw on the internet just all this stuff they're putting into our foods, all the chemicals and colorations and everything else. So let's talk about that for a second. So this past weekend, I went to Lowe's. I was looking at some things like compost and how to prepare these garden beds, what I was going to use. But of course, while I was there, I bought about $40 worth of seeds. Wide variety fruits like watermelons or cantaloupes. Also, of course, the staple items, tomatoes, carrots, cabbage, eggplant, name it. I had squash. I had all kind of stuff. But then on the back, if you ever look on the back of that, I don't know where you all are at, but I live in Augusta, Georgia, and it's right on the border of South Carolina. It's divided by what we call the Savannah River. So if you look on the back of those seed packages, it has these color codes. And for me, is usually in the orange and yellow. So whether it's February, March, April, May, the March usually stops with the yellow and the April kicks in with the orange. So I'm asking myself, and this is going to be the experiment of all this, how much difference does it make if I start something that says like October, January, and March versus something that says April, July, November, however that works? So I would imagine that for me, where we're at is pretty mild. I would almost guess that anything that says March, I could do in April. And almost anything that says April, I could do in March. That's the experiment. I mean, what do I have to lose? I paid $2 a pack for seeds, which makes it to be about, what, 5 cents per seed. So I already have the soil. I have everything done. So what's the risk? 10 cents, maybe. So I'm going to try it out. But of course, for the past week and a half or so, I've really been cleaning. I actually bought some tomato plants from a gentleman offline just to kind of do some experiments because growing them from the seed is kind of tough and leave it to the pros. But I'm still going to experiment a little bit myself and I'm still having some issues with discoloration. Some of them are turning kind of brown and some already have flowers and stuff. In fact, I bought tomatoes and peppers. I remember when I grew some peppers a couple of years ago, those things go crazy. It takes no time. So the experiment now is yellow versus orange, orange versus yellow, April, March. I'm testing to see before I go on vacation, which is next weekend, April 6th, getting back around the 11th. So will still be on spring break when I get back. So perhaps that weekend when I get back, still be Masters week. Remember that golf tournament? I'll still have that weekend to plan everything. I shouldn't be worried about rain because it always rains during Masters or spring break for us here. So I was contemplating putting things in the ground or seeds before I go on vacation. Not sure if they'll just maintain, but you know, for the first week or so, it's important to make sure that those seeds get water. So I think I'll just wait till I get back. Speaking of which, bring me to my next topic. I was building the garden and the dimensions are about 10 by 12. So the thing that I'm coming across right now is the design. Where do I put what? What can crossbreed or hybrid or whatever? How can I put things together? So I've seen some pictures in magazines and online where they make like a, almost like a U-shape of boxes. So the boxes in a U-shape. And even maybe one box in the middle where you can easily work into the boxes and reach stuff. So again, with 20 some odd seed samples that I bought, I need to figure out which ones we're going to put inside the box that I'm making and the ones that are going on the ground. I can eliminate two real quick though. The cantaloupe and the watermelon, those are definitely going in the ground. But then for everything else, I have to figure it out. And for that build, I'm using some 44 by 48 pallets as the wall, as the base. So if you turn them sideways where you can get an even number, such as 12 feet in width, you'll put them, how can you say, horizontally. And it'll be 44 inches high, but 48 inches wide. And the good thing about this, you can estimate how wide the cuts and how you put things together. So for example, 48 inches is 3 feet. I'm sorry, 48 inches is 4 feet. So you put them side by side, you put three of them together, you have 12 feet, right? 12, 12, 12, and then you may do some cuts. And the idea to get the height for me is taking some 2x4s or 4x4 posts and securing them to the top of these pallets and adding another, I would say, 4 feet. So making the overall garden box or the garden house about 8 feet tall. I'm 6'4", so it had to be at least 6 feet. And when I was still concerned about what I'm trying to do is keep animals out. So they said that 6 feet is a minimum to keep deer out. 7 is ultimate. So this will be about 8 feet. But I'm not, of course, done with that because still have squirrels and whatever else might be out there. So I need to bring that wire over the top. So I've been designing the build of this, still using pallets as the door. And the 2x4s is this braces going across the top. So that's kind of what that's going to look like. So that should be a pretty easy build. I pretty much got it framed out. Now it's just a matter of putting a couple more cuts together for the height. So also, I do have the water situation. I ordered some stuff off of Amazon as far as the funnels going to those 275-gallon water tanks. I'm also using some other things to capture water in, like those maybe 35-gallon little blue containers or like 35-gallon water containers. And some may be black like rain ones that you might see. But what I have inside this garden house is a variety of containers and how to make them work. And again, whether I'm using 5 gallon buckets, standard pots, boxes that I have laying around, or some other type of storage containers, whatever the case, I'm going to use everything that I have, which is something I forgot to mention about the homesteading or the off-grid thing that Jim had mentioned, using or reusing everything that you have. So at the end of the day, if you have a 5 gallon bucket, reuse it for water, reuse it for, I don't know, for your emergency kit. But anything you buy, try to reuse it for more than one time and save the environment. So after I finish building this garden house and putting some seeds in the ground, I'm going to continue work on that gazebo building. It's kind of going to be a outdoor kitchen because currently it's like the only way you can eat outside is underneath a canopy, which is fairly boring sometimes, and the wind. So I'd rather build something that has a solid structure, a permanent structure, a table, a grill, and that's what I'm looking at. It should, again, be start. It should start off with pallets being the base, and then I still have these some metal roofing that I bought some months ago, and it's going to make the roof about 12 feet wide and 10 feet deep. So that's the structure of that. As I watched some videos the other day about QuickCrete and how to put those posts in the ground, and also laying out maybe a 4-inch cement pad without having to use things like rebar. So if you're interested in something like that, take a look at some of those videos and look at how you can mix QuickCrete without actually having to stir it. It was very interesting. So what they did was put it in the pit. They dug the little pit out for the QuickCrete in there, leveled everything out, strained it so it's not all bubbly or have any little rocks on the top. And then lightly sprayed it with water, let it sit for an hour or two. Sprayed it again, let it sit an hour or two, I guess. Sprayed it again and repeated the process till it got wet, I guess, from the bottom up, and then solidified. So I thought it was pretty interesting. So I can imagine if you have to stir up the concrete and whatever you dig out, try to stir it up and then try to level it out and make it nice and neat, that could probably take some time and make some mistakes. Or even getting something like a mixer and mixing it and then pouring it in. So this looks pretty simple. So just take a look at it. Just maybe Google something like how to mix QuickCrete without mixing it, or how to make a QuickCrete pad without stirring the mix or the concrete. So that was very interesting. Also, I don't know if I've ever told you, but I started building a cabin. It's about 2 years ago when I first started on the land. And the oddest thing about it is the structure, the base and all the measurements. Now, I began to build this thing because I saw someone with some nice lumber, thick lumber, let's say 6 inches, 6x2, something like that. But the funny part is I ignored that the length were weird, 9 feet, 6 inches, 9 feet, 8 inches. But I'm excited. They were sturdy. They looked good. And they were inexpensive. So I took those boards and put them across those deck bricks. And that's how I laid the foundation. So it worked out everything pretty good. And it squared everything up great. Using those deck blocks, putting everything in place, nailing them and screwing them together. And that was my base. But here's the situation. When I started going inside, framing everything, whether it was the flooring, the walls, the exterior, there's nothing. There are no materials that are 9 feet by 6 inches. Not half, not a third. Most everything you buy in the stores are 4 feet by 8 feet. So think about it. If I put two together side by side, that gives me 8 feet with a foot and a half left over. And that's in every capacity, whether it's sheetrock, whether it's flooring, the roof, everything. Which is thrown off. It was a great learning experience, but moving forward, I tell anyone, know your measurements, know something about basic construction. It'll save you so much time. Now I have to go back and rip boards for another extra foot and a half. The roof was complicated. And now because I didn't have a roof on that thing for a long period of time, almost 2 years, I would imagine, that the rain has destroyed the floor in a lot of spots, not completely. So what I need to do is go back over it with, I guess, a half inch of plywood on the floor to make that floor sturdy again. So about insulation, because let me start over. On the exterior, over the summer, I put some that Lowe's building wrap, a house wrap around it to secure it from rain from the exterior after I put the roof on. So that was a big deal. And then as I started looking at what I was going to use to put around the building, as far as what was affordable, what looked good and what I needed to do and how much time I had. So I was looking at things like vinyl siding. I looked at using pallet wood. I looked at almost everything you could imagine. The vinyl siding stuff was just more than I really wanted to deal with. The bottom rack, the bottom tray you had to put on the bottom of the house or the cabin, then put everything on top of it, and then put the corner pieces on. And it just seemed like it was going to be a little bit more time and definitely more money that I wanted to spend. it probably would have been $600-$800 after everything to do that. And that's just not something I wanted to do. So what I did, I bought some tarps from Harbor Freight. I bought the camouflage ones because most other ones are either gray or blue or black. I didn't want black because of the heat. So this was the camouflage. They were about $12 a piece, I guess, about two or three. Because I started from the side of it, not where the door is at, because I'm still working on the door, entry door, and brought it around the face, then around the back side. But I'm also leaving the back open right now because I'm going to be doing some electrical work back there as far as building the outlet and potentially something with water, like plumbing for a sink or a toilet. So, and needless to say, the measurements on the on the tarps were 10 by 12 or I want to say 11 by 14 for this one, something like that. But nothing's going to be perfect. If I did a 10 by 10 or 10 by 12, it may have been too short or too tall or too short, whatever the case may be. It worked out. So I'm just going to have some excess on the bottom, which I'm going to cut and then pin with some steel or aluminum siding or just staple it. So that's worked out pretty good. So I have two sides covered and it looks pretty good, especially from a distance. Because before with the white house wrap, you can see through the trees. I leave some trees up front and some grass up front just so people can't look through. So, but the white was sticking out quite a bit. So putting the tarp on and the camouflage colors definitely helps disguise it a little bit more. So back to the interior. Funny enough, after reading, I found out that most people don't have insulation in their walls. It's usually in the ceiling. And I've seen it in the ceiling, but I guess it's not in the walls. I never thought much about it. But for this cabin build, I wanted it to be warm in the wintertime. I haven't made my mind up completely about what it's going to be because of the size. It could be a nice bathhouse, which I think I'm going to definitely make it for the summer. But then in the wintertime, it's probably going to be more of a sleeping area because I used some moving blankets for the insulation in the walls. For my studio, for years, I had several shipping blankets that I used for insulation in the studio until I got other acoustic foam and just got better equipment like microphones. But when you're in the studio and you're trying to record, if you don't have a nice studio or a nice microphone or a mixer or whatever the case, you want the room to be as treated as possible. If you're doing any podcast or any other type of production, your room doesn't have to be 100% covered in acoustic foam, but it helps to have about 50%. And as we speak right now, I'm using a Shure SM7B, if anybody wants to know, and a Rodecaster Pro for the mixer. And in front of me, I have some cushions in front. And behind me, I have a blanket on a board that kind of prevents the sound from bouncing all over the place. But this is just for those who are interested in podcasting. So sorry if I got off topic, but I find podcasting be fun and very energetic to kind of reach across and kind of help people in some way. And the good thing about podcasting, unlike videos, is you can actually listen while you're driving or working out. You don't have to look at the videos. So that's why I'm into the podcasting business. So I put the insulation in the wall and it should be fine. And now I'm concerned about how I'm going to close the walls up. So again, with those weird cuts that I made, I'm still going back and forth about what to do. So I didn't want to use sheetrock because it's heavy and I would still have to paint it afterwards. I considered using pallet boards, but that can be tedious too because, again, I don't have the studs every 18 inches. I have the studs like every 36 inches. So trying to stagger the boards would be kind of hard. But I guess for me, knowing that it's not for aesthetics, I don't have to stagger them. So I could take those boards because usually they're going to be 44 inches across and just kind of lay them one on top of each other. It doesn't matter. It's just who's going to care, right? So I could very well use those and cut them off at 36 inches, 36, 36. And I care less about the staggering and how it looks. Once I get it painted and put a couple of things on it, then the stagger or the lack thereof should be okay. So I left a corner open in the back because I'm going to use my toilet. I don't have plumbing out there. So this little flushable toilet, which is good. And then in the same corner, I'm going to put a window air conditioner. I was debating about the portable ones you may have seen, but some people say that the heat in such a small space like that may accumulate inside the space. So that's a concern for me. And of course, the window air conditioners are a lot cheaper than the portable ones anyway. So for this space, I'm not going to need to move stuff around so much. So I think my best bet for the money would be the window unit. I have a brand new one that I'm going to put in my cargo trailer that I made. And I'm turning into a camper. So the new one is going in there potentially. And I have an old one that may put in this cabin. I may swap them. Either way, I'm not really sure at this point. And the old one, I'm not sure if it gets cold or cool. I paid like $30 for it. And last time I tried it, it worked. But I was doing it in an uninsulated space. So with these shipping blankets, I'm thinking they should definitely keep heat in the winter. And definitely keep heat in during the summer. But during the summer, it may not be a place to be other than taking a bath or shower, washing up, and getting out of there. Otherwise, there'll be air conditioning as well. So those are the two projects that I'm working on currently. I've still been moving a lot of trash around. And at some point, I may need to get some type of, earth moving equipment, because doing stuff by hand with shovels and rakes is time consuming. I mean, I do have time. But again, if I could, in the future, move some stuff around quicker. If I'm going to do more as far as expanding the land, I will probably need to rent something from one of the places, and one of those tow things or ground things run about $300 for a day. So that seems doable. I mean, to pick it up, let's say 6 a.m. in the morning, like when they open, and have it all night and bring it back the next day for $300. I think I'll definitely get my use out of it. So those are experiments that I've got going on right now. So I'm looking forward to it. When to plant the seeds, when I come back from vacation, and that is pretty much it. Now, remember earlier I was talking about reusing things. So in this little bathroom or cabin, whatever you want to call it, I'm going to be using a vanity that I had in storage. It came from my house. So it's the standard white. And while I don't have running water for it, I can put one of those little bowl sinks in it and put a little pump thing in it and give it a nice little aesthetic look. Not only would it look good, but just having that underneath storage adds a little bit of storage space so I don't have everything all cluttered up in there. So with a quick paint job and a bowl sink, it's going to be a good thing to do. So up lately, I'm going to be going back to my house. The tenant that I had in there will be leaving actually in the next day or so. And at that point, I'll be getting ready for that master's rental of the golf tournament I told you about. So they'll be coming in a few days after while I'm in Puerto Rico. So it's a lot of moving parts. But what I'm getting closer and closer to think that I do want to sell my house. I'm going to give it another few months over the summer and see if I can get like another long-term rental, 6 months, 8 months or something from a student or whatever. Again, because Airbnb was kind of a waste of time for me. It was just, again, a learning curve. Remember saying, break a couple of eggs and make some omelets. I broke a couple of eggs and I realized that's not something I want to do. So I'm looking for a long-term rental, and I'm on this site called Furnish Finders, dealing with traveling nurses and other folks. So there's a couple of things that popped up, but what they were offering was just way below. And I don't know who gave them the scouting report, but they're requesting to get into a house like this week and 2 weeks from now. And I actually sent an email to someone and said, look, sorry to break you the bad news, but there's nothing available here in Augusta, Georgia, from the 1st of April to mid-April. No one's going to rent you a house, or there's no hotels available. So you might need to talk to your company, whoever you're going to be working for or with, and let them know this is the worst time of the year to try to relocate to this area, because everything 50 miles out in radius is going to be occupied. Every hotel, every house. So they need to go ahead and readjust their plans, unless they're going to move into an RV or off-grid. And that's, again, something, another market I can potentially tap into with my property, is that when people come into town, there's something I could do with that. And I'm not sure what it could be. They have campers, and I don't know, but that's something I could tap in as well. So that is what I'm always looking for, is another opportunity to make a little dough. So I hope to get another episode uploaded before spring break, and I think I will. Work has been pretty lax lately. Kids are kind of checked out because they're graduating, or some seniors are graduating. It's just toward the end of the school year. And as I counted, there's only like 36 more days in the classroom. We'll finish at the latter part of May, like the 22nd or 23rd of May, but it's actual school days and what that may be. So this is last week in March. So we're out tomorrow because of Good Friday. So a week out in April for spring break. So we're talking about four weeks maybe in April, and 3 weeks in May. So you look at 4 times 5 is 20, and 3 times 5 is 15. So you're looking at 35, 34 days left in school, and I can't wait. So hope you guys are doing well. Go out there in the ground and start figuring out what you're going to do with your design in your garden and your off-grid solutions and everything else. So go out there and read up on something. And don't be afraid to make some mistakes. Just don't do something you can't fix. But as they always say, what is it? Measure twice, cut once. And don't use anything that's 9 feet and 6 inches. I promise you, you're going to hate yourself if you do. 4 feet, 8 feet, 12 feet, 16 feet. That's what you want to use. All right. So again, thank you for listening. Go out there in the woods and do something. And I have two last words for you. Get lost.